Hello, and welcome to David's Book Talk, and today we have a very special guest. He has a new series, mystery series. His name is Colin Cotterill. His new book is called Killed at the Whim of a Hat. Yes, you heard that title correctly. It's from Minotaur Books, and he's here to talk about it. Hello.
Good morning, David. How are you?
Good morning. It's good. It's good. We're laughing, or at least I'm laughing because of the time difference here. You're in St. Louis and I'm in Pennsylvania, so we have this. I forgot all about the time difference. I always think of St. Louis on the same time zone. But anyway.
Well, if you phoned me this time yesterday, you certainly wouldn't have got any answer from me because my voice was so gruff and grumpy after all night drinking that I couldn't have even communicated with you.
Now you're from Thailand.
Yes.
You are. You have you lived in Thailand all your life?
I've been there for about 13 years and about 3 or 4 years in Laos, but I was born in England.
I have to say, now is this going to be the start of the series?
It is, yeah. The second one's already written.
It's just incredibly good. I mean, I'm sitting here just before I called you, just totally enjoying this book, wishing I had more time to finish it. I'm on page 220 or something, but I just love these characters. I've really fallen in love with the characters already, and just from book one.
That's good news.
Is this series really popular in Thailand?
Well, my books aren't published in Thai. Well, they do get the English version, but they haven't translated any of my books in Thai.
Oh, really? Why is that?
Well, I'm partly to blame for that because I don't let them.
What? You don't let them? And why? I have to ask why that is, too.
Well, I kind of like the anonymity of, you know, being the mysterious person in a small village, and I don't want local media getting in touch with me and spoiling my perfect Eden.
I don't know where I'm going with this. You just finished, or you're about to publish the last book of your other series with Dr. Siri. Now, how do you say this? That character's name, Siri?
Siri Phaibun.
Phaibun. Oh, I love that. That sounds so wonderful. And that's been very popular. I have a friend who reads every one of them, as you know. You actually sent her a book for me, and that was wonderful. But so why did you end that series, and why did you begin this series? I mean, were you just ready to move on to a new series?
Well, actually, this is one more myth that I probably instigated myself, that it's the last in the series. The fact is, it's the latest in the series.
Really?
Yeah, originally it was, I probably called it the last of the Soho Dr. Siri books, because Soho, I was moving the books to the publisher in the UK.
Oh, that's why they wrote last one. Oh.
Yeah, but then Quirkus in the UK, who have now taken over my books, got in touch with Soho and asked them whether they'd like to continue in North America. And, of course, they jumped at the chance because they wanted to keep the series going. So it wasn't the last of the series, it was the last, originally it was planned to be the last of the Soho series, but it didn't turn out like that.
So that means there still will be a publisher in the United States?
Yeah, and the same publisher.
Oh, it will be the same? Okay, it will be the same. What? I have their catalog, and it says it's the last book in the series, and I told my friend, I gotta go back and tell her now, because...
Yeah, I think, well, since they published their catalog, we've negotiated with them to continue the series, so maybe the next catalog should continue.
See, when I read that, I just thought, well, he's going to start a new series. You know, writers get to the point where they want to start something new, and obviously you're not tired of Dr. Siri.
Well, I don't think I fear for my life if I did kill him off, that there are so many fans out there that would gladly fly over to Thailand and put a bomb under my house. I really daren't get rid of him. So
we don't want that to happen.
No, we don't. My dogs don't either. They need to get fed. But the new series is really a chance for me to try something new, to see, because you always wonder whether you're just a one series person, and you like to experiment with new voice, new time frame, and a completely new set of characters, just to see whether or not you're a one-night wonder.
Exactly. Obviously, you're not. Obviously, you know what you're doing, and you're getting an award. When are they presenting you this award?
Well, it's not really an award. I'm one of the foreign guests of honor at BoucherCon this year.
Well, that's sort of like an award. I guess you don't get an award.
No, they did. In fact, they gave me this very large.
Oh, really?
This large award that says thank you for being the guest of honor at BoucherCon. And I was worried because it looked like a large magnifying glass, and I was afraid that I wouldn't be able to get through any airplane X-ray machines, because they'd be afraid that I'd use it to harness the rays of the sun and set light to the airplane. So I had to send it by post back to Thailand.
Oh, wow. That's really cool, though.
No, it's great. I mean, for me, it's a remarkable honor, you know, because I don't get to mix with many writers and I don't get too many foreign accolades where I'm living. So this is a wonderful compliment.
Now, how does that come about? Where you obviously, you know, you're a terrific writer. Now, there's how many Dr. Sherry books right now? Six or
there
seven?
There are eight finished.
There's eight. What, the eighth one coming out in December?
The new one, the first one with Quercus.
Right.
It's called Slash and Burn, and it's out, I think, out here in November.
Oh, interesting. But how does one become a guest of honor? I mean, who decides who's going to be a guest of honor?
Well, the committee, they sort of start working on BoucherCon 3 years in advance, because there's so much work that goes into it. And the people who organize the particular year have their favorite in-country authors and their favorite overseas authors. And I think they put a shortlist together to decide who they'd like to invite and then contact them early to see whether they'd be available. So 2 years ago, the people at Murder by the Book in Houston were very fond of my books. And so the organizers there got in touch and said, would I be able to come in 2011? And as I didn't have anything planned for the next 2 years, I jumped at the chance to be over here. And they sent me the airfare and they've arranged everything for me.
Oh, that's incredibly wonderful. That's really cool. How long does it take to get by plane from Thailand to the United States?
Well, if I came straight through, I'm leaving from D.C., and if I went straight through with just the one stop in Tokyo, it would be, I guess, about 18 hours.
Oh, my goodness.
But I did it the clever way this time. I stopped in Tokyo for a couple of nights, and then I went to Seattle, and then I've come overland via Las Vegas to get here.
That's great. Obviously, you don't get to the United States all that often, I guess.
No, it's been a while since I was there. I've got friends over here, and it's nice for a chance to stop off and see them.
Now, where exactly do you live in Thailand? I mean, what town?
It's a little town called Langsuan, and it's about halfway down the country on the Gulf of Thailand. It's a little fishing village.
And how many people live in the village?
Around me, there are sort of... It's not like you imagine you travel through the countryside and then you get to a village and then you travel another 10 miles, get to a village. It's all kind of spread out because people have their palm plantations and their gardens. So around me, there are about, I don't know, 2,000 people. A lot of Burmese day laborers, a lot of fishermen. But they're very hard to count, you know, because they're so spread out and you don't very often get them in the same place at the same time.
Right. We should spell your last name for people who haven't read you before. Cotterill, in case they want to go on Amazon or something and find more of your books, because you're really a terrific writer. This is, I must admit, the first book of yours that I've read. It's just incredible. I really just enjoy it. Now, Killed at the Whim of the Hat. You know, you look at that title, everybody's like, what's a whim? Is that part of a hat? And you but explain to people the title without giving something away.
Well, the title of the book and the titles of the individual chapters are all drawn from quotations from from George W. Bush, and Killed at the Whim. Sorry, I'm going to have to have a few. Can you edit this out?
It's all right.
It's been a long week. I've been shouting at people all week, so it's the last day and the last dredges of my voice.
Right.
George W. Bush has very few things to be remembered for, but his quotations are remarkable, and so each chapter is headed by one of his quotations, and the title comes from a quote that he made about terrorism.
Right.
And the fact that terrorists would gladly kill Americans and invade the country at the whim of a hat. And that's a misquote from two other phrases that he should have been using. And so the book is actually, I have to thank George W. for entertaining me and entertaining the viewers the readers through his through these quotes.
Yes. George Bush isn't real popular over here, as you might imagine.
Yeah, I did get that, yeah.
I wonder if he even reads mysteries. George Bush. I wouldn't be surprised if he did. He seems like somebody who might enjoy mysteries.
So I've been advised not to discuss politics when I talk to anybody over here.
Oh, really? That makes me want to ask you even more, but I'll refrain myself from doing it. Are you a big mystery reader?
No, I don't read very much at all. Any kind of fiction. I, if I have a chance to read, I usually read non-fiction.
So you don't read mysteries at all?
No. In fact, I didn't realize I was a mystery writer until after the second book came out, you know, that I fitted into a genre. I thought I was just entertaining people, and then the publishers got back and said, I'm on the mystery shelf in the bookshops, and then the readers of mystery magazines got in touch with me and said, no, it's an interesting new mystery. So I had to actually fit into a category that I didn't expect to be in.
Yeah, how interesting. But all of your books are mysteries. I mean, they all have a mystery element to them.
Well, yeah, but they also have historical and political and spiritual. They've all got sort of a mix of everything you could have chosen. They could have just easily fit on the supernatural shelf, because there are ghosts in the other series. There are ghost stories, and the protagonist carries the spirit of a 1,000-year-old shaman around with him. So, if they'd wanted to, they could have called them spirit stories as well.
Interesting. Well, what I like about Killed at the Whim of the Hat is the fact that these characters they're just so interesting. I mean, they're not your regular everyday characters. When you read a book, you know, characters are pretty, even though they're troubled, and your characters are certainly troubled, but they're in a way that makes you laugh. I mean, there are scenes in this book anyway, that just make you laugh out loud. I mean, I'm trying to picture what these characters looked like in my mind, and like they're all kind of crazy, even yeah. The main character.
Especially the main character.
But
what I wanted to do, I mean, normally if you read anything set in Thailand, invariably it would be an expose of the nightlife scene in Bangkok, and the prostitutes and the transvestites and the drug addicts and the corrupt policemen. So what I wanted to do was to turn those stereotypes upside down and have a sort of a what-if scenario. So what if there was a policeman who refused to take bribes all through his career,
right,
and therefore became ostracized within the police force because nobody could trust him anymore? How can you trust a policeman who doesn't take bribes?
Mm-hmm.
The transsexual transvestite who was beautiful when she was in her 20s and then ages 20 years, and what happens to her if suddenly she's not beautiful and she doesn't have any friends and any men chasing after her. So all of the characters look at a stereotype from a completely different point of view.
Right, and that makes the books even more interesting. And you have the mother who's kind of losing it mentally.
Yeah, well, another one of the stereotypes is you get the very sturdy matriarch figure who's always in control and always looking after the family. So this what-if was, what if she gets to an age where suddenly Alzheimer's starts to take over and she's the irrational side becomes more prominent than the rational side.
The
family suddenly doesn't have the matriarch to keep everything in order.
Right. Now, how old is she exactly?
She's mid-50s, coming up to 56, I think, 57, around there.
And that's pretty young, I mean, to...
Yeah, it is.
And the main character's name is Jim Jury.
Yeah.
It almost sounds like Jim Cherry or something.
Well, somebody said it's from, you know, like the Jim Jiminy, from Dick Van Dyke, some movie that he, from Mary
right.
Poppins.
Right, yes. Was that intentional?
Well, no, because it was a name that, if you live in Thailand, is quite a common name, but it was not until I sent it overseas that people made that comment. But I think that's good, you know, if it's got a name that you remember for some reason, then it all helps in sales for the books.
Right. Now, what do people have to know about Thailand to read these books? I mean, is there anything that the people, I mean, some of the language is different, so you have to know exactly what these words mean. Now, are there words that they need to know before they read these books?
I don't think there's any, you know, you don't need a glossary at the beginning of the book to be able to understand it. I think the names are probably the only things that are difficult, because people ask me how to pronounce the names. And when they do the voice books for this series, then I have to put in a tape that gives them the pronunciation for the different names. But apart from the place names and the people names, there isn't really a lot of local language that's used.
Every once in a while, and there's a word, and now I'm forgetting what the word is, that you use. Now I don't remember the...
Well, it might be Nong. Nong is the word that you use to address a younger person or a person of lower status than you, like a waitress in a restaurant. And that's, if you don't consider yourself to be a Nong, then it's a little bit insulting. You know, so the main character is, she's in her 30s, so therefore she's not really anybody's younger sister. But people insist on calling her Nong because she's small and she's female. And that rubs her up the wrong way.
Yeah, she's definitely an interesting character. I mean, as the books play out, and I'm so looking forward to the second one. I just like. I mean, you never know what the characters are going to be like. I mean, what's going to happen from book to book? I mean, are these characters going to grow? Are we going to see changes in the characters as the series goes on?
Perhaps more development than changes. The second book is called Grandad. There's a head on the beach. And it looks at the Burmese situation, because there are a lot of real-life Burmese abuse going on in my region. And I wanted to highlight what's happening with the day laborers who come from Burma and are abused and taken advantage of. There are something like 2 million Burmese day laborers living in Thailand. Most of them are illegal. And, of course, their rights are not very well respected. And so my characters become friendly with the Burmese community and help out in a couple of cases that we'll talk about in the second book.
Granddad, There's a Head on the Beach. What a wonderful title.
I was afraid they wouldn't let me get away with that one, but everybody seems to like it.
I love it. I mean, it makes me laugh just hearing the title. And I don't know why, because it sounds like a serious book. Now, do you consider your books more serious or more fun?
My aim is to make people laugh, you know, so I hope that they're entertaining, but I can't possibly write an entire book without having some focus. And there's always an issue in my books. In the Siri books, it was usually a historical political issue. In the new series, the Jim Jury books, I look at some social issue that's really prominent at the moment. And it's good for me because now I'm writing in contemporary voice, and I can pick up things that are happening around me. Whereas the previous series, was set in the 70s, and most of the issues were resolved at the time or later. So it gives me a chance to actually make a statement about things that I'm worried about now.
Right, exactly. I wonder, I laugh about the police department. Are the police really like this over there, just like it is in this book?
Well, you'd see there's a disclaimer at the end of the book from my local police force, because I had a visit from a policeman. I'd interviewed a couple of policemen before I started the series, and I got a visit from a policeman who said, Could you, I told you that there was this gay policeman in our local force, but I'd rather you didn't quote me, and I'd rather the rest of the police force don't know that I'd said that. So I had to put a disclaimer to say there are absolutely no homosexuals in our local police force, whereas in fact there was. And a very open, effeminate policeman. Ours is the kind of area that police from other areas are sent to when they're demoted or when they're transferred for doing something despicable. So we get the dregs of the dregs. And, our local police force makes the Keystone Cops look like the SAS.
Right.
They're really odd. All the uniforms don't match. The guns work or don't work.
So what color uniforms are they liable to wear? I mean,
it's usually brown or brownish, but
okay.
The policemen here buy their own equipment. So if they can get a second-hand uniform, it's a lot better for them to pick it up, which means it's washed out and it's not as brown as it used to be,
right.
Or it's still got blood stains on the back. So you get a real mismatch of uniforms.
Huh. Dare I ask you how old you are?
I'm 60 next year.
See, well, you're kidding me. I mean, you look like you're in your 30s in the book. On the book.
Well, that's because they put these really old photographs.
That's not it. It looks like a brand new photograph.
I look after myself. I eat a lot of fruit.
What kind of fruits are you normally eating?
Well, we've got, you know, on my trees around my house, we've got, you know, our own bananas and papayas and guavas and jackfruit. So there's a lot of natural fruit growing around me, and the market has a great array of different kinds of fruits.
Do you find yourself eating fruit at every meal you have, or a lot of? Is it more of a time of day that you're eating these fruits, or?
Yeah, it's more to sustain yourself as you're working. You know, you can either take a glass of water, or you can just pick a fruit from the tree and keep working. I spend half the day in the garden, so I'm outdoors quite a lot, and I'm with the fruit.
That's absolutely wonderful. I wish I had fruit trees around me. I mean, I have some. I know. I'm sure there are some, but I'm not a. I do love fruit, especially grapes. I've always been a big grape and orange lover.
I usually take my grapes in fermented form in glasses, so I do get my grape intake.
That certainly is a grape intake. I wonder if you get all the nutrients.
Well, I'm sure you get more than you expect.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, I've discovered the wonderfulness of 100% fruit juices lately. So I've actually been. That's interesting, though. How big is your house in Thailand? I mean, how would it compare to a house in the United States?
Well, I moved to the south, and we didn't have enough money to build a real house. So we built a little guest house, and I was sort of hoping that money would come in from the books and eventually I could build a real house. So I'm living in a one-room small guest house. Next year, I'll be finishing the main house, and the guest house, I hope, will be open for writers to come and finish their book. So, you know, that end of the book period where
right.
You need to be away from the television and the telephone and the kids and the noisy neighbors. And so I'm just sort of offering a three-week end of book visit place that I pick them up at the airport and then lock them in the guest house and they can keep quiet for 3 weeks.
Now, do you have children?
I don't know, but I have dogs.
Same thing, right?
Yeah, well, harder, I think. I have four dogs and the dogs
Wow.
pretty much dominate my life.
So who's watching the dogs right now, even as we speak?
I've been lucky. I found a website called Mind My House, and it's where people who are traveling around look for a place that they can go to stay for a few weeks, and the owner is going overseas, and you make an arrangement with the travelers and they come to stay during the period that you're away. So I'm away for a month this time, and I found a very nice Australian couple who were delighted to be living in the middle of nowhere with the dogs on the beach and hanging out. So it's worked out perfectly for both of us.
Now, you're doing a month tour, other than the BachelorCon, you're going to be doing bookstore tour, too?
Well, a lot of it, I mean, I've done some bookstores, but...
You've already done.
I didn't plan for it to be a book tour. It was mostly staying with friends, visiting people that I hadn't seen for a while. And if there's a bookstore in town, then I'd stop off and visit the bookstore. So in Seattle, for example, I hadn't planned to be in Seattle, but I stopped by a couple of bookshops there and signed some books and met the bookstore. I'm a big supporter of independent mystery bookstores, so whenever I'm in a town where I can find one, then I stop off and sign some books and do some promotions.
Right. I work at one of the biggest ones in Westchester, Pennsylvania, an independent bookstore. We have about 250,000 titles, so...
Oh, great. Well, sorry I'm not going through town.
Right. I didn't think you'd be coming through, but just in case you ever want to, you know, you can look us up. We need to talk about Killer the Women of Hat. We need to talk about the plot. Now, why don't you describe to people who haven't read it yet what exactly it's all about?
Well, I suppose, basically, you have your Thai family who were born and lived all their lives in a city in Chiang Mai. And one day the mother decides to sell off the family home and buys a resort, a broken-down resort on the coast of the coast of the Gulf of Siam. And the family, through the obligations that Asian families have, are obliged to go with her to make sure she doesn't get into any trouble. And they turn up at this resort, which nobody wants to stay at. It's a dilapidated, old, really horrible place. Who is our protagonist, she had the opportunity to step into the role of senior crime writer at the Chiang Mai Mail. And so her life is turned upside down because suddenly she's helping to run this resort in a place that she really doesn't want to be. And worst of all, it's a place where there's no crime, where the local police station doesn't even have a lockup. And so she's miserable for the first, almost the first year that they're there, because really she has nothing to do apart from report traffic accidents and the yield, the fruit yield for that season. And fortunately, out of the blue, a Volkswagen van is discovered while they're digging a well in one of the fields. And in the van are two bodies. And the bodies have been in the van, evidently, for some 30, 40 years. And so this starts one of the two crime investigations that Jim gets to do. And the whole book is her trying to find out where these bodies came from and how they got to be buried 10 feet under in a field in the middle of nowhere.
And there's also another plot line with an avid, too.
Yeah, there's a... Jim's really delighted when she she hears that a local abbot has been killed violently in a place that violence is virtually unknown. This is an abbot who's come from the city to investigate the doings of a local abbot, and the local abbot is the one who's suspected of killing him because he's afraid that something may be discovered about his past.
Now, I have to ask you, you don't have chapter numbers. You don't divide your book. Is that true of all your books, or is it just for this series?
No, it's true of all the books. So the Doctor series has lines, jokes, words, chapter headings, but no numbers.
Why is that? I mean, is that just the way you've always done it? And is there a reason why that is? I'm just curious.
It's fun. I like the quiz element of writing a book. So all of my books begin with a title before I start to write them. If I don't have a title, I can't start writing the book.
And most writers, I mean, a lot of writers I talk to are the exact opposite. They write the book and then think of the title afterwards.
Yeah, because I'm a quiz person, you know, so if I can put together a funny title, and then I want the title to be remembered, you know, Granddad, There's a Head on the Beach.
Right.
I started with that title and then put a book around it. And the chapter headings are pretty much the same. So I read through the chapter and I think, okay, what would be a good title for this chapter? And it pushes me to think of something interesting or amusing for each chapter.
Right. And that's a great way to look at it. I mean, I'm totally intrigued by your writing style. How long does it take to write? How long did it take to write Killed at the Whim of a Hat?
Well, that took a bit longer because I had to do research. The old series, I have all the research pretty much down, you know, for that period. So I've been through all the books. I've done a lot of interviews. So the new one took a bit longer. And the research usually takes me about 3 months, 4 months.
And wow.
Then the actual writing, I try to get done in 3 weeks. So before I lived on the beach, I used to go to an island and just spend 3 weeks putting all of that stuff into a story. And then coming back and spending the next 2 or 3 months trying to understand my handwriting and then putting it onto computer and turning it into a real book. But the actual throwing the story down takes 3 weeks, and the new series took 4 weeks because they were new characters and it was a new idea.
Right. Is it more fun with this series, or are you having just as much fun writing this series as you were the last series?
I had a lot of fun because I wasn't confined to, once you get 2 or 3 books into a series, you start to have to be responsible to the readers because they expect something of the characters.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And they're very quick to get in touch with you and say, XXX shouldn't have done this because he's not that kind of person. Whereas when you start a new book, you don't have any rules, you can just make the characters do whatever you like. And then start to worry about the feedback when you get to the second book.
Now, how many countries is this book going to be published in, or is it published in already? I guess is.
Well, the new series right now it's just in the States and the UK. Germany's just picked it up, and to my delight, it's being translated into Bulgarian.
Oh, how interesting! Why Bulgarian? You wonder why?
Absolutely no idea. Obviously, there's something in the book that the Bulgarians find attractive.
Now, will you go to Bulgaria at some point to do a tour?
This is going to be my last trip for a while. I'm expecting to stay home for at least a year, and then if anything happens, it will be 2013, somewhere around there. It's time to stop going away.
I'm so glad to be able to talk to you. I mean, it's so wonderful to talk to you about these books because you're such a good. I mean, you're really a good writer. I mean,
thank you very much. Thank you.
You really. What kind of reaction are you getting at the VoucherCon? I mean, what are people saying to you?
It's just so hectic that, you know, I'd like to be spending more time talking to people, but I'm running around doing panels, and I get 2 minutes with this person and that person. But the feedback, people have traveled from the East Coast and the West Coast, they tell me just to see me. So that's been the biggest compliment I've had ever in my life, you know, that somebody would jump on an airplane or drive for 10 hours just to come and see what I look like. And these are big fans of the books. It's great for me. This whole thing is great for me because, as I say, I live in a place where you don't bump into writers in the 7-Eleven. Your world is online, and the only contacts that you get with fellow writers and fans is through the internet. And so, to be in a place where you can talk to fans and hear what they're saying about your books is a great opportunity. I'm gonna be feeding off of this for another 6 months.
Right, exactly. Now, this one's out in hardcover right now. Is the plan that you'll be in paperback too, mass market, or are you going to be in trade, or what's going to happen with that?
I think it's in paperback already. I think it came out last month in paperback.
Really? In the United States?
Yeah.
Wow, I hadn't even known that. Wow. Oh, interesting. And I'm looking at this cover now. Of course, there's a hat on the cover, but what in the world is next to the hat? What is that thing?
I've just got a copy right in front of me. Let me get my glasses on and take a look.
It's some kind of a little...
Oh, no, it's a spirit house.
That's a spirit house, okay.
Yeah, so the spirit house is a little... Once you build a house on a piece of land, the first thing you have to do is relocate the spirits that you're kicking off the land.
Oh,
and so you build a little house just for them to live, and you apologize for taking over their land. And so they spend the rest of their eternity living in the spirit house, and you make offerings. You know, every now and then you put food offerings or drinks in the spirit house to keep them sustained.
Right. I like the you describe an orange hat that's at the scene of one of the crimes, and I'm trying to picture that orange hat in my mind. It's not every day you see an orange hat.
No. It's and actually I can't imagine too many people wearing orange hats, especially around these parts.
Exactly. It really is. I mean, the way you describe things in the book and situations are very clever, and I really enjoy that. I mean, that's going to be something that I'm going to enjoy for the whole series. And what does it feel like? I mean, you're around all these people at this VoucherCon, and you're around all these people that love your books. And is this the most attention you've gotten with your book so far?
Well, 6 months ago I would have said yes, but I went to Germany in June, I think it was July, and the Germans take their books very seriously. And the tour, I did a 5-day, 5-city tour in Germany, and the highlight of that was in the Munich City Morgue Theater, where there were 550-something people in the theater where they train the students to do autopsies.
Right.
With me and a German movie star reading from my book, and a two-hour session, paid session, during the Munich Crime Festival, and people with photographs of me and people who had read the book in English and people who read the books in German. And it was like being a Beatle, one of the Beatles back in the 60s. And once you've gone through that, really, your head is just so huge that you can't get it into any other countries. Germany is very serious about adoring writers, which is a wonderful thing, because so many places, books and writers are becoming sort of superfluous to the entertainment industry. And in Germany, it seems to be flourishing.
Hmm. Don't you ever have an urge to read other mystery writers just to see what they're like?
I do, and I would, you know, if it wasn't for the garden, I'd have more time to actually sit down and read books. But when I do find time to read, it's really, as I say, doing research for the books. If I go on holiday, which is not very often, I take a book with me, and I usually get through one or two books during a trip like this. So I do have two books in my suitcase that I read on airplanes. And so I don't absolutely limit myself to fiction, to non-fiction, but I really just don't have the time to read.
Right. But it sounds like you have very little time, for anything. But, I mean, as a writer, you work a number of hours. I mean, I think of some of the popular writers here in the United States, and some of them have, you know, we have writers here that have sometimes 3-4 books a year, and you wonder, where in the world do you get time to write 3 or 4 books a year?
Right. I barely have time for one.
Exactly. That's very true. But when you say you do the title first, you actually think of the title, and then you write the book out. Do you know how the whole book is going to go, or does it? Do you write and it plays out as you write it?
Yeah, creative writing teachers really hate me because I'm a disaster when it comes to being an example for young writers, because I'm one of these annoying people who doesn't plot. So I have various ideas. I have the historical background. I have all the research and interviews. And then I have the title of the book, but I don't want to know how the book ends. I enjoy the process of writing the way that a reader reads. I like to not know what's going to happen on the next page. You know, and sometimes I turn over the page and I'm disappointed because there's nothing written on it yet and I have to do it. You know, I'd like somebody else to solve my crime for me. But it's for me, the exciting part is developing this story as I go along and seeing how it works, whether it works or not.
Right, and what if it doesn't? I mean, what if you get 3/4 of the way done and all of a sudden something doesn't make sense? What do you do?
I turn around and go back.
You do? You go back and change everything?
To the point where it didn't work, or the pathway that I shouldn't have taken, and then I get onto the other pathway and then go in that direction.
Now, is that hard to do, or does it come pretty easily? I mean, this is what, book, you said 8 or 9?
Yeah, this is 8 for the series, the Lao series.
Right.
There's only happened a couple of times, complete disasters, where I really had no way to get out and I had to go back again. So usually, I find that the more tangled I get, if I can get out of it without going back, that's where the really exciting parts of the book come. That because the reader is actually tangled up as well, and he has no idea how I'm going to get out of it, and I have no idea how I'm going to get out of it. And if I can solve that riddle and get through it, then that's a very satisfying moment for the reader as well.
Yeah, I'm wondering, just reading this book, how it's going to end. I mean, how everything's going to come together at the end. And that's the thrill of reading a book. I mean, we read a book and we think, well, what in the world is going to happen at the end of this book? And how is it all going to play out? And it's got to make perfect sense. I mean, as a reader, we expect that from a writer.
You're not going to get it until the last page, I'm afraid.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The very last page?
Yeah.
Which is ironic.
Don't go to the last page and read that. Oh, that's not fair. You've got to keep going, will you?
You know, I think I've already read the last page of it, but I didn't notice anything, so I'm okay. But, I mean, I'm glad you told me that now, because I don't want to spoil it. You know, I did that one time. I read a, I don't know if you've ever heard of this writer, Mary Roberts Rinehart.
No.
Who's a very popular mystery writer back in the 30s and 40s, but I actually read a book of hers, and I read the ending. And I remember coming down to my mom and telling her, and I started crying. I was so upset because I'd ruined the mystery. And my mom yelled at me. I remember her yelling at me, saying, "Why'd you do that? Why'd you read the last page?" But
yeah.
Sometimes your curiosity gets the better of you.
Right. Well, I hope I haven't inspired you to read the last page again.
No, you've inspired me not to ever read the last page first of your books. But that's such an interesting concept. Now, do you get a say in what's on your covers?
No.
Just simply no. You never.
For me, that's a little bit, because before I'm a writer, I was an illustrator. Well, I still am an illustrator, and I have a sort of a concept of what kind of covers I would put on there, and I suppose quite rightly, the publishers have this team of professionals who know what sells and what doesn't sell. So they very rarely listen to an author as to what he wants or she wants on a cover. And so a lot of the covers I've seen from around the world have been very disappointing. I think one or two that I've liked didn't sell very well, so perhaps I shouldn't be making too many suggestions as to what goes on the front of my books.
But I'd love to see what you would put on the front of your book. So, I mean, when we read an author and we enjoy an author, and I know that I'm going to continue reading this series because I just enjoy it so much, but I would love to see what your interpretation of the cover should be, what it should look like.
Yeah, the other series, the Lao series, I always saw as more black humor, and the covers were never black humor. I think they were tapping in on the Alexander McCall Smith jolly, quaint animal covers that were selling well, so maybe it's the cover that sold, not the author, they thought. And so they've always been quite twee. And I'm not a big fan of twee covers or postcards from Southeast Asia covers. I like covers that actually make you stop and look and either be shocked or ashamed or disgusted or really quizzical as to what's happening inside the book.
Now let me read some of the titles of your other series so people get an idea of how unusual your titles are. 33 Teeth, Disco for the Departed, Anarchy and Old Dogs, Curse of the Pogo Stick. I mean, whoever thought a pogo stick could be cursed, you know? The Merry Misogynists, and Love Songs from Michelle Legrand. They're all interesting titles. You never have a dull title.
The Anarchy and Old Dogs title was actually, that was negotiated, the only one that was negotiated after I'd finished the book, because we'd agreed on a title, and then halfway through writing it, I heard from the publisher that the marketing people had decided not to let me go ahead with it. And the original title was The Devil's Vagina. And I thought that was a wonderful title, but unfortunately they thought my audience, my regular audience, would balk at buying a book with that on the cover.
How interesting.
So I contacted a few bookshops afterwards, and I did a sort of a survey with 12 alternative titles, and we had a sort of an election as to which one would win.
Right.
So Anarchy and Old Dogs won the second round.
So you don't really like that title?
Well, a couple of bookshop owners said that they could sell out in 3 days if they had that title, but probably the people who bought it wouldn't be the kind of people we want to consider fans. So the sleazy people would buy the book, and the regular fans wouldn't.
That's incredibly interesting. I mean, who would ever think that a book title would be... I mean, the publishers have the right, of course, to do what they want, but... You know, I never think of it, and I've heard other people say that, you know, they'll bounce the title, the author will bounce the title off the from the publisher, and the publisher will either say, yeah, I can sell that, or no, I can't. But, I mean, I guess people buy books based on the title, too, which is interesting.
Yeah, well, if you don't know the writer and you don't know the series, then, you know, you find an interesting title on the shelf, and it makes you want to buy the book.
I just wonder, what do you want to be remembered for the most? I mean, do you want to be remembered for being a good writer? Do you consider yourself a good writer? How do you look at your writing?
Originally, I thought I was too naive to be considered good because I didn't have a writing or a reading background. So I didn't know, I couldn't compare what I wrote with what other people wrote. Now I'm at the stage that I have to believe the reviews because a lot of people have said that I can write. And I'm slowly believing them.
Well, don't you have to believe that you can write, or why would you do it if you didn't believe you could do it?
Well, I believe that I'm an entertainer. I believe that I can, because I'm a cartoonist, I know that I can entertain people. But the form of entertaining people as writing is hard work. And so much effort goes into writing that by the time you finished it, you're not aware as to whether or not you've achieved the entertainment value, whether you've just, you know, plotted and put down a story, but is it as entertaining as you thought it might be?
Well, I think, one of the things is when you read a book, when I read a book now, I'm a big reader, so I read a lot of different stuff, but I want to be entertained, but I want the characters to feel real. I want to feel like I really know these characters. I want the plot to be totally real. I want to understand everything from the beginning. I don't want it to make weird sense. I want it to be... And that's hard to do. That's hard to write a book like that every single time.
A series helps because even if you don't get the characters right in the first book, you're allowed to develop them over the series. And I found myself focusing on a new character with every book. So people that you just mentioned in book one, they get their own cameo in book three, and you get to find out their background. And in a one-off, you can't really get away with that.
Now, you mentioned... I'll talk while you clear your throat a little bit there.
Sorry, it's been like this all week. Because you're in a crowded room every evening with authors, and it's so noisy that you're shouting to people. And I wake up in the morning and I have no voice at all.
But I can imagine what it's like.
The first panel in the morning is usually me making hand signals to show people, and writing things down on cards to answer questions because I can't actually speak at all. This is the first day I've been able to get words out.
Right, exactly. Now, you mentioned I guess you must be a Stephen King fan, because you mentioned a Stephen King short story in here. What is the name of that short story? Because I saw that in the book, and I thought, I don't know what that story is.
I can't remember the name of it. It was about, this is the one about yesterday catching up with you?
Yes.
And it was...
I'm wondering if I've read the story, because I've read almost everything he's written, and I don't know that story.
It's a bunch of people on an aeroplane, and the aeroplane...
Oh, is it the Langoliers?
It could be, yes, that's the one. And they arrive at an airport, and things look as if they're real, but none of the food tastes like
it. I believe that's the Langoliers.
That could be it, yes.
They made a miniseries in the United States here about that. You can actually see it on DVD.
If I read a book, I don't like to see the movie afterwards. You know, I don't mind seeing it before, because invariably I'll be disappointed with the movie.
Right. And do you find that with your books too, that you wouldn't want to see them as, you feel
I'd
that
like,
way?
I'd like the money that comes in from having it as a movie, but I'm not sure I'd see it. Perhaps they lend themselves more to TV, you know, now that the BBC version of Alexander McCall Smith has become cult popular in the States and in the UK. I can see Dr. Siri, the Lao series, becoming a TV series, but I don't think I'd want to watch it.
Yeah, I've never really read any of Alexander McCall Smith's. I'm not quite sure why. I don't think I'd enjoy them. I don't know, but I mean, I really get into your stuff, and I'm looking forward to reading this whole series. But it's just because I instantly identify with the characters. I care about this mother. I mean, I care about what's happening to her mind, and I find that interests me enough to see what's going to happen next. I mean, he literally, when she comes home, and I'm speaking about the main character now, Jim Jury, and I'm sorry, I'm forgetting the characters sometimes, but when she comes home, we never know what the mother's going to be like, what the mother's going to be doing. I mean, at one point she comes home and she's behind the counter on the floor, you know, it's like, what's going to happen to this person next? Do you know in the long run what's going to happen to the mother? I mean, is it already planned out, or, not that I want you to tell me, but...
No, really, I like to start the new book at the same stage as you. So what happens will happen irrespective of whether I plan it or not. They're just going to take over.
Right. So in writing the book, something might come to you, like maybe something's going to happen to her, maybe something going to happen. But
at the end of the second book, there's this huge upheaval in the lives of the mother and the family. Something occurs which nobody would have expected at the beginning of the book. So these things just turn up, and I have no say.
Right. Well, we'll end in a few minutes here. I don't want to overtax your voice, but it's been so one. I'm just enjoying talking to you because you're so easy to talk to.
If I could actually answer the questions without growling, that would be much easier.
Right, you're doing a wonderful job. It's okay.
Thank you.
Everybody has heard all the good stuff. Now, is the plan to have one book a summer? Like, can we look forward to one of these every summer?
Well, the way it's working at the moment is, with the new series and the old series running consecutively, I've got one of each every 8 months. So there'll be 8 months and then Dr. Siri, and then another 8 months and then Jim Jury. So it won't be yearly, it'll be year and a halfly for the each. If you get into one series, you have to wait a year and a half for the next one.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah, sorry.
We have to wait a year and a half?
Yeah, I've got responsibilities, you know, I've got to go fishing and, you know, feed the dogs.
Well, I can certainly understand that, and I sympathize with you there, and I want you to have as much fun as you possibly can, but the next book,
Granddad's Ahead on the Beach, well, that's written already, so that should be out, that should be out, I guess, about March next year, March, April.
By this, the same publisher?
Well, so it's Minotaur in the States and it's Quercus in the UK. So the Quercus edition will be out, I guess, around April next year.
I've never even heard of Quercus. That's a new name for me in book publishing.
They were voted the publisher of the year for the last year in the UK. So get to know them, because they're big and they're getting bigger. They had the fortune of and the foresight to publish the Stieg Larsson trilogy. UK. So it certainly turned them around, and it means that, you know, they have more money for advertising me, which is definitely a good thing.
Exactly. It's funny how you strike me as a person who is not real full of themselves, and then you'll throw in this comment, and I think, wait a minute, I think he really is full of himself. You know, you intrigue me on that level. I mean, I don't know how to take you.
No, that's good. Keep them guessing. That's the way you go. Don't give everything away.
But you're definitely a people person. I mean, I can tell by talking to you that you enjoy people to a certain extent. But, I mean,
it's ironic that I should go and live in a place where there aren't any.
Exactly. Well, that's nothing. We have an author that writes here in the States named Craig Johnson, who lives in a town of 23 people. So don't feel quite so isolated there.
You're, no, you're right.
Compared to him, you've got a huge town.
Yeah.
So what are you reading at the moment?
I'm reading a book about the opium and heroin situation in Southeast Asia, because the next Dr. Siri book, I'll be looking at heroin back in the 60s and 70s, and the fact that most of the heroin that was produced in Laos during that period was sold to the American GIs in Vietnam. Before it even went overseas, they had a huge following that the Lao government were actually making their money by selling to GIs, and I'd like to get that into a story somehow.
That's wonderful. So you're always looking into something interesting. You've always got something going.
There's a lot of material there. I can't use all of it, but it's just fascinating. I was always a kid at school who went out and played football but didn't really study anything, and so I'm making up for those years by reading nonfiction now and learning things that I should have learned a long time ago.
Right, exactly. I'm really excited about this series. I can't wait to keep reading it, and now I'm wishing. I know when I finish this book, I'll have to wait a long time for the next one.
But don't forget, you can now go back to the first book in the other series and
exactly.
Them as well.
Exactly.
But I prefer that you buy it as opposed to just read it from your bookstore, you know, just spend some money on it.
Exactly. Well, to keep
with
you...
my bookshops to support.
Whatever it takes to keep you writing, because I want to keep... And even Janet Maslin's even loving you, too, and she's one of the toughest critics there is.
I think the New York Times has something going with me, you know. For some reason, they really like me. I haven't, you know, proposed to anybody, dated anybody there, so it's all long distance.
Well, you really are good. That's why they like you, because you know what you're doing.
Well, that's a nice compliment. Thank you.
It is. It's been a joy to talk to you. And the new book, again, is called Killed at the Whim of a Hat. It is a new series with Jim Jarre, and it's just fantastic. You got to set aside some time to read it, because you're going to love it. And we've been talking to Talon. It's been a real pleasure.
Well, that's very, very nice. I've had a good time as well. I'm sorry about the voice.
It's okay. It's no problem at all. And this has been David's Book Talk, and we'll talk to you next time.